Welcome back, everyone. We are Pam Sutton and Ann Risto from the Student Support and Academic Achievement Unit of Florida's Problem Solving Response to Intervention Project. This session, number two, a focus on the one, desired result, which is a multi-session experience to support Florida educators in not only utilizing but also sustaining a multi-tiered system of student supports with fidelity in every district, school, and classroom. Today's guest is Ms. Jody O'Meara. Jody joins us with a long resume of advocating for diverse learners, not only in the state of Florida, but also well beyond. Thank you so much for joining us today, Jody.
My pleasure, Pam. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. So first things first, let's just jump right in. Let's break down the terms alignment and articulation. We see alignment and articulation of teaching and learning as being reciprocal and co-informing. Connect with us on your personal evolution of these terms, please.
All right, Pam, let's start with that. And a little bit about my background in order to get to that point is that I started in the general education classroom back when, quite a long time ago, when inclusion was just rolling itself out and districts were really trying to figure out what that really meant. So I had a very diverse population of students with standards-based curriculum and high-stakes testing and a textbook, and was expected that that was going to meet the needs of students. And we all know that that's certainly not the case. So within my personal evolution with that, I realized very quickly that something more was going to be needed, that there needed to be a better match between the students and the curriculum. When I started looking at the curriculum itself, I saw that there were a lot of know and can do. Those are the facts and the skills. And I definitely had students who were struggling in some of those areas, being able to do and know certain things, but then I also had students who came into my classroom already knowing and could do those things. So once again, I found myself in that same place as education moved toward unpacking curriculum. And we had an emphasis on the curriculum mapping where we were looking at verbs to be able to distinguish levels of rigor for students. And yet over time, we realized that it wasn't just about the verbs, it's about what we were doing in response to the verbs. But again, it was still very single focused on the idea that we were going to just look at the curriculum or look at the student need, but we were missing that idea of putting the two together. So over time, differentiation became a real emphasis, and we, most of us are familiar with that whole definition of differentiation being changes in content, process, and product based on students' readiness, interest, and learning styles. And that was very popular for quite some time. But again, we realized that when we look at that and segment it in those ways, that we're missing so much because it's not about just the content or just the process or the product. And it's certainly not just about whether or not students have those levels. We have so many different ways to differentiate. So with the work that I've done, I've really moved away from that traditional approach of differentiation and move toward intentional and systematic decision making. And really that's where my emphasis is. And when we look at the alignment, it's really about the decision making. It's about the relationships with the student and the curriculum. And it's not just looking at the relationships and saying, okay, a student likes this or can do this or is interested in this. It's really about how does that learner meet with the content? What is that relationship of the student and the content? And so it's so much more than that. When we look at our curriculums in the past, a lot of it had to do with covering content. And teachers still today have pressures with, I have to cover this, I have to cover this. And we hear students saying, why do we need to know this? And my question back is, do they need to know this? We as educators need to be able to answer that question before we even start looking at the curriculum alignment in any direction, is to say, what about these standards? What about these expectations is so important that we want students to be able to walk away from them and say, I truly can understand this. And earlier I referred to the idea that our curriculum used to be about knowing and doing. We're really moving more toward that idea of understanding. And that's where it becomes more tricky. Because when we just have to know or do things, those can be done at the very superficial level. An example I love to give all the time is that if I gave you a quiz on the division of fractions, most of us could do a worksheet on the division of fractions. We know how to do the algorithm. However, if I had you apply that to real life or give you a problem where you had to actually understand what happens to those fractions when we divide them, most people in our population, even mathematicians, struggle to be able to understand what really happens or explain what really happens in the division of fractions. So when we're looking at our curriculum, I think our first step is to really examine it and question, do they need to know that and why? What is the essence of that, as opposed to just the verb or just the words and meaning, because they can become very diluted in that way. And the only way I really think we can do that, again, is looking at the relationship between the student and the content. Where I talked about just a minute ago, making that meaning and creating that understanding. What we're doing there is creating concepts. We want students to know things to be able to do them, but we also want them to have an understanding. That's the only way that they can apply and transfer that knowledge. But with understanding, we have those challenges of assessment. How do we know when a student understands? There's a lot of challenges that come with that. So a lot of times it's harder work. The teachers and our curriculum developers have harder work now that we've moved to understandings. But these thoughts have gone on since early times, going back all the way to 1962 work from Hilda Taba, who talked about the idea that we need different levels of knowledge, that we start with facts and skills, but then we need to get to those understandings. And what excites me about her work is she gets to that point of, at the highest level, it's about the disposition. And her whole emphasis is that relationship with the content. And when I think about that, I think about, for instance, the growth of gardening or watering my plants and things. I need to know how to water my plants. I need to know that they have water. I can have an understanding of plants needing water at one level. But a landscaper who does this as a profession needs to know it at a whole different level. So his relationship with that knowledge and that understanding is completely different than what I need. So when we look at that curriculum and alignment, we need to be looking at what does that mean for me as a person? How do I make that meaning within that content? So when you ask me where I've come personally in this evolution, it went from first studying the curriculum, studying the students within differentiation, to really studying the dynamics between the two, then carrying it a step further to say, we want to be making the decisions based on that relationship, that energy between the two, as opposed to one or the other. I hope that clarifies, Pam.
Oh my goodness, absolutely, well beyond. It takes educators beyond that cursory level of just allowing students to be able to access, interact, and demonstrate their learning, well beyond that, to that thorough understanding and application of what they know. That is so beautifully said. Thank you so much, Jody. I have to tell you, though, you answered questions numbers one and two all rolled into one, which is beautiful. Thank you so much. I'm going to turn it over to Ann to pick up the gauntlet and move on. Thank you.
All right. You're welcome, Pam. Before I go to Ann, I wanted to just mention, in case somebody else wanted to be inspired by these things that excite me much. A long time ago, there was an article published called Blue Blood is Bad, and it was through ASCD, and it really is one of the main things that changed my thinking. And it was about a struggling student who was in the back of a classroom in a middle school, And the teacher was talking about the circulatory system and drawing the veins and arteries and things, and kept talking about the blue deoxygenated veins. And she kept saying that. And this little girl kept saying, so the blue blood is bad. And she said, well, it doesn't have oxygen. And the teacher kept moving on. But then later they went back and talked to this girl who really had no interest in science up to this point, was not a good student and was a struggling student. But she really wanted to know about the blood and why we were talking about it as blue blood and what that really meant and whether it was good or bad. And it was because she had just found out that a family member was on dialysis, and she had herself experienced a blood transfusion. And so she was concerned about having bad blood in her body. Mm-hmm. And so for her, that personal connection to what they were talking about was so important. It was important for her to understand it better, but it was important to look at the way she was learning it differently than the way some other students who didn't have those experiences learned it. And it had nothing to do with how strong a student she was academically. It had to do with her reason and needing to know that information, her relationship with that content.
And her perspective. That's really, thank you for sharing that. I'm going to look that one up. I love ASCD as well. So
it's a great article. And like I said, it changed my thinking quite a bit.
Well, and that is a great example of what you just spoke to about studying, or the importance of studying the dynamics between students and curriculum and that energy that can be formed, which is an awesome segue into our next question regarding how we think of horizontal alignment as providing that linkage between learner and experiences along a learning continuum, while realizing not every student will take that same learning path. Obviously, that little girl had a different experience and exposure with the blue blood, and that was an opportunity for the teacher to step in. Can you offer some strategies that are generalizable that we can do to different learning experiences or differentiate learning experiences?
Absolutely. I'll give you two different aspects of that. Strategies within planning. The questions that I will often go through with teachers is asking them who, what, how, and why. Who are our learners socially? Who are our learners linguistically? Who are our learners fundamentally, foundationally? Where is the relevance for those students? So I ask the who question. And then I ask the what question. What level of understanding do they have, and where do we want them to go? And then the how question. How are we going to get them there? And then most importantly is why. Why is it important for them to have that knowledge? And it could be that it's a foundational piece for something else. It could be that it's something that's important to them in daily living skills. But thinking about that in our planning will help drive that intentionality in those decisions to keep us on track, so that we don't go steering off into, looking at the pattern and trends of themes of books and end up doing puppet shows. So when we look at those questions, it keeps us on track to why are we doing this and why is it important for this student to know that. So in the planning process, I like to ask those questions of the who, what, how, and why. As far as the teaching strategies themselves in the classroom, you may notice I haven't talked too much using the word scaffolding. Scaffolding is really a buzzword within differentiation, but scaffolding is just one small piece. When we think of the scaffolding and the idea that we're providing supports and then systematically taking them away for students to become more independent. That's great for those students who don't have the independence yet. But it's not the be-all and end-all. So I try not to overuse that word of scaffolding, because our students need support in different ways. And some students need support for more challenge, because they're coming into your classroom because they already have that challenge. So the term I really like to use, more so in looking at the classroom and the teaching, is examining the depth and complexity. How deep does a student go? And how wide do they go? So we're looking at connections across time, across disciplines, but then we're also looking at the depth. Because going back to our first question with Pam, when we think back to those ideas of having dispositions about content and things like that, we want them to make that personal meeting. And so for some students, that depth is going to be really important for them to make that personal meaning or the connections to be able to apply it across different areas. Also within our curriculum classroom, one of the great strategies that I promote for a lot of reasons is the use of analogies. Analogies provide just that tool to be able to ask students to think more deeply and to think across content areas. I joke with teachers that I do professional development with is that the best part of analogies is you don't have to know the answer. So I could say to you, how is vertical alignment like building a cake, baking a cake? I don't have to know that answer at all. That's for you to do the thinking. So now you're doing the work, not me. So when we present analogies like that, analogies are a great tool to increase that higher level thinking and to get them to go to greater depth and complexity, because now we're stretching their thinking to make that transference to other areas. So analogies are one that I push a lot with a lot of mileage. The other thing that I joke with teachers about is if you're having a walkthrough done and you ask an analogy question and then ask them to share with another person, you have high levels of engagement, you've asked higher level thinking skills, you get a lot of those check marks on those walkthroughs just from that one little tool of the use of analogies. And then finally, I think the obvious where we would start with all of this is in universal design. Universal design is critical to all of this. When we're looking at that who, we're looking at a diverse population. We know that already. So if we're starting with that platform of universal design, we're not looking at individual, we're looking at individualized. We want students to be able to have individualized instruction, but it does not have to be something different for each student. So as we're looking at these relationships between the student and the content, each one is going to have an individual relationship, but our teaching becomes individualized to provide those opportunities. The individual part is their personal making of meaning.
That is so awesome. Like the relationships amongst those things that you were just explaining, the strategies within planning, the examining the depth and complexity, the universal design for individualization, really makes me think about the vertical articulation. And there's such a relationship of learning involved for the learners across or within grade bands. How do you see various grade levels connected so that standards are scaffolded in an effort to lead all students to that achievement?
And that's a really great question. It seems that the horizontal alignment we may have more control over because we're working in many cases within teams at our schools. But I think that our vertical articulation is lacking in many cases. Mm-hmm. That's one of the areas that concerns me. If we're going to ask, do they need to know this? Why is it so critical that they need to know this? That vertical articulation is so critical, and I think it often does get lost in the shuffle. We focus so much on our own little world that we forget what's coming before it, what's coming after it, and the big picture of why. Our curriculum, the tool, is set up through spiraling. We have our standards that are building on each other. We have the ability to be able to create those spiraling curriculums and those spiraling lessons even. But it's not about the tool again. We can't look at those things in isolation. So we have a great tool, but if we're not using it correctly and using it in conjunction with, you can't use a hammer if you don't have a nail. So we have a great tool, but are we using it appropriately, effectively, and with the other essential elements? And I think in many cases, we're not right now. We need more professional learning communities. We need more conversations. I would be very excited to hear a first grade teacher, talking with a fifth grade teacher, talking with a ninth grade teacher, on the exact same content. Because when we go back to that idea of understanding, when we look at our science curriculum, we have the understanding of plant growth in second grade, in third grade, in fourth grade, in fifth grade, in sixth grade. One of the concerns that I have is when you go in a classroom, how does that first grade lesson on plant growth look different than the seventh grade lesson on plant growth? And in some cases, it doesn't look that different. And that's where we're really missing. So the vertical articulation is something that does concern me, because without that, a lot of this gets lost or it gets done in isolation. So it misses the power of that long-term effect.
We're so glad we're in agreement with you, absolutely, because when we were brainstorming for this next release, we really think those structures are missing in supporting our educators in being able to recognize the value of that vertical articulation and, like, even the role of the PLCs. There may be sometimes when teachers have opportunities to meet with other teachers in different grade levels, but the structures to make that depth and breadth that we want for our students available for our teachers is lacking. We've not seen great evidence of that. So definitely something for us to strive for, right?
Yes. Yeah, one of the most powerful meetings I remember was several years ago when we had teachers of different levels all talking about number concept, the whole base 10 system, because that's something that started in kindergarten. And what does that look like in algebra? What does that look like in calculus? Why is it important for those students to understand at a truly deep level the base 10 system before they can do those higher level thinking within the math? That was a really powerful opportunity that those teachers had to all talk about what it looks like and what the value and importance is at the different levels. Mm-hmm. So I agree completely, and more of those conversations would give us more bang for the buck in all of our other efforts as well.
Well, and that actually brings me to you've sprinkled throughout our considerations for planning and how important that is. And to wrap up this portion of the podcast, we could talk all day about these areas that we've hit so far. But we really see the work with backwards design and this series focus on desired results itself as being key to ensuring that we're collaborating around vertical and horizontal articulation. What stands out to you for Florida educators when we talk about horizontal alignment and vertical articulation?
I think one of the things that stands out is just what we've talked about, is giving teachers those opportunities to dive deeper in, to not be focused on what needs to be covered, what needs to be taught at surface level, but giving teachers an opportunity to really look at why are we teaching students the elements of a story? Where is the value of that? Where does that build onto? What comes after that? Even in vocabulary, which of the vocabulary words are the most powerful vocabulary words for students to be using even at the youngest grade levels that are going to carry them through? But I think that those are the conversations that we don't get to have. So if there was one thing I would like, is the same thing that most professionals would like, it's more time to talk about our profession. But some really critical conversations, not just what are you teaching, what are your planning look like, what are we going to do next week, mm-hmm. really analyzing and beyond, like I said, the curriculum mapping and things like that, for that decision making to be very intentional and systematic. All of my work within differentiation that I do as a consultant is all about the intentionality. And the first thing I say is, you know, I can give you 150 different strategies in your classroom. They're great practices, but they're simply that. They're random acts of great practice unless there's intentionality with them. Unless we go back to those relationships between the student and the learning, they're just good, strong strategies, but they're hit or miss. When you talk about the idea of the backwards design, looking at the end in mind, focusing on desired results, I have a poster in my office that says, if you don't know where you're going, any road will do. I think that really applies here. In the fact that if I've been spending all this time talking about intentionality, we don't want just any road. We want it to be the most effective and efficient road for our students. We want it to be the one with the depth and complexity. So we don't want just any road. And then there's another phrase that says, if you don't know where you're going, how will you know when you get there? And I think that that's as critical. When we haven't even begun to talk too much about the assessment piece of all of this, which is a whole nother dynamic that can be another hour.
Absolutely.
But when we look at that piece of it, how do we know mastery? Mm-hmm. You know, if we don't know where we're going, we have no idea what mastery looks like. And before, when we were talking facts and skills, it was easy to see mastery. They could either do it or they couldn't do it. They knew it or they didn't know it. But now that we're in this whole world of really looking at understandings, it takes a lot more to be able to know exactly where you're going and what it looks like.
It absolutely does. And I think you hit the nail on the head when you said it's about the opportunities to dive in, right? And a place to start is really considering our who, what, where, and why. And those are seem so simple. But the complexity within each of those offer great opportunities for our educators in Florida. So unfortunately, we've got to wrap things up, but we have 90 seconds left for our lightning round. And Pam, will you set the timer? And I'll be ready with some fun questions so that we can all get to know Jodi O'Meara a little bit more.
Yes, the different side of Jodi O'Meara. We're much harder than anything else I've talked about. This is so much fun. You're going to giggle, we promise.
Okay.
It doesn't take much. All right, well, I've got the timer going. All right, Anne, are you ready?
I'm ready. Here we go. Okay. Jodi, what is your favorite childhood book?
Corduroy.
Oh, love it. Okay. I'm curious. What are you reading right now?
Where the Crawdad Sings.
Ooh.
It was a gift.
Okay. You'll have to let me know on that one. So what's your favorite thing to do to relax?
I'm not very good at relaxing. I would probably say working out is my way of decompressing.
Okay. Dinner last night, takeout or cooked?
Takeout.
So what do you love most about your job?
That it's different every day.
When you're going to finish this phrase, when I grow up, I want to
be amazing.
Fantastic. Well, I think you're there already. You're going to have to find something else. So who comes to mind as an inspiration to you?
Mahatma Gandhi.
Ooh. And one thing you may know about me, finish that phrase. One thing you may not know about me.
One thing you may not know about me. I've jumped out of a plane.
I knew that, but other people probably didn't. Okay, last thing. Something that brings me great joy is?
My family. Time's up, guys.
Oh, wow.
That's a beautiful way to end that. Oh, my goodness.
So thank you so much, Jodi. We really appreciate your service to the students in Florida and your camaraderie with us as professionals.
Oh, I was honored to be here today. Thank you.
That was so much fun. Thank you so much, Jodi. It's an absolute pleasure as always.